Homily for the First Sunday in Lent, Rejoicing Always, by St. John Chrysostom. There is nothing whatever that will be able to afflict one who is well ordered in mind and careful about his own soul, but he will enjoy a pure and continual pleasure. And this ye have heard from St. Paul, who exhorts us, saying, Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say, Rejoice. We know that to many this saying seems impossible. For how is it possible, says someone, that he who is but a man can continually rejoice? To rejoice is no hard matter, but to rejoice continually, this seems to be impossible. For many are the causes of sadness which surround us on all sides. A man has lost either a son, or a wife, or a beloved friend, more necessary to him than all kindred, or he has to sustain the loss of wealth, or he has fallen into sickness, or he has to bear some other change of fortune, or to grieve for contemptuous treatment which he did not deserve, or famine, or pestilence, or some intolerable exaction, or circumstances in his family trouble him. Nay, there is no saying how many circumstances of public or private nature are accustomed to occasion us grief. How then, he may say, is it possible to rejoice always? Yea, O man, it is possible, and if it were not so, Paul would have not given the exhortation. All mankind are universally desirous of pleasure and gladness, but all are not able to obtain it, since they know not the way which leads to it. But many suppose that the source of it is in being rich. But if this were its source, no one possessed of wealth would ever be sad. But in fact, many of the rich think life not worth living, and would infinitely prefer death when they meet with any hardship, and of all men are most exposed to excessive sadness. For you should not look to their tables, or their flatterers, but to the trouble that comes of such things, the tumults, the calumnies, the dangers and the alarms, and what is far worse, that they meet these reverses unpracticed, and know how not to bear with fortitude what befalls them, whence it happens that calamities do not appear to them such as they are in their own nature, but even things which are really light come to seem intolerable, whereas with regard to the poor, the contrary takes place. Things that are irremediable seem easy to be borne, since they are familiar with many such. Others again suppose that to enjoy good health is the source of pleasure, but it is not so, for many of those who enjoy good health have a thousand times wished themselves dead, not being able to bear the injuries that have befallen them. Others again affirm that to enjoy glory, and to have attained to power, and to administer the highest offices, and to be flattered by multitudes, is productive of unceasing gladness. But neither is this the case. And why do I speak of the other offices of power? For although we were to mount up to royalty itself, we should find it encompassed with a diversity of troubles, and having so many necessary causes, the more of sadness, in proportion as it is surrounded with a greater weight of affairs. And kings have of necessity as many causes of sadness as there are waves on the ocean. But if monarchy is unable to render life devoid of grief, then what else can possibly achieve this? Nothing indeed of this life. But this saying of Paul alone, brief and simple as it is, will open to us this very treasure. For many words are not needed, nor a long round of argument. If we are only to consider his expression, we shall find the way that leads to it. He does not simply say, Rejoice always, but he adds the cause of the continual pleasure, saying, Rejoice in the Lord always. He who rejoices in the Lord cannot be deprived of the pleasure by anything that may happen. For all other things in which we rejoice are mutable, liable to become fugitive, and subject to variation. And not only does this grievous circumstance attend them, but moreover, while they remain, they do not afford us a pleasure sufficient to repel and conceal the sadness that comes upon us from other quarters. But the fear of God contains both these requisites. It is firm and immovable, and sheds so much gladness that we can admit no sense of other evils. For the man who fears God as he ought, and trusts in him, gathers from the very root of pleasure, and has possession of the whole fountain of joy. and as a spark falling upon a wide ocean quickly disappears, so whatever events happen to the man who fears God, these, failing as it were upon an immense ocean of joy, are quenched and destroyed. This indeed is most to be wondered at, that whilst things which minister sadness are present, the man should remain joyful. For if there was nothing to produce grief, it would be no great matter to him that he was able continually to rejoice. But that at a time when he is urged to sadness by the pressure of many things, he is superior to all these. This is truly a matter of astonishment. And as no one would have wondered that the three children were not burnt if they had remained far off from the furnace of Babylon, for the circumstance that astonished all was that, having been so long in such close contact with the fire, they left it more free from hurt than those who had not been in contact with it. So also we are able to say of the saints, that if no temptation had fastened itself upon them, we should not have wondered at their continual rejoicing. But the point worthy of admiration, and which surpasses human nature, is this, that being encircled on all sides with innumerable waves, they are placed in a far better condition than those who enjoy an entire calm. It is evident, then, that there is no possibility of finding any situation in life, encircled with continual gladness from the things without. But I will endeavor also to prove this point, that the believer is one who cannot possibly be deprived of the enjoyment of a continual pleasure, to the end that ye may not only learn, but aspire after this condition of life, which is devoid of grief. For suppose a man having nothing for which to condemn himself, but cherishing a good conscience, and panting after that future state, and the fulfillment of those good hopes, what, I ask, will be able to throw such a person into sadness? Does not death seem the most insupportable of all things? Yet the expectation of this is so far from grieving him that it makes him the more joyful, for he knows that the arrival of death is a release from labor, and a speeding towards the crowns and rewards laid up for those who have contended in the race of piety and virtue. But is it the untimely end of his children? Nay, he would also bear this nobly, and will take up the words of Job, "The Lord gave, the Lord hath taken away. As it seemed good unto the Lord, so it came to pass. Blessed be the name of the Lord forever." But if death and the loss of children cannot grieve, much less can the loss of money, or dishonor, or reproaches, or false accusations, at any time affect a soul so great and noble. No, nor anguish of body, since the apostles were scourged, and considered their scourgings as a subject of additional pleasure. And they departed from the council, rejoicing that they were counted worthy to suffer shame for the name of Christ. Did any person insult and revile such a one? Well, he was taught by Christ to rejoice in these revelings. "Rejoice," saith he, "and be exceedingly glad, when they shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake, for great is your reward in heaven." But suppose a man hath fallen into disease. He hath, however, heard another admonishing and saying, "In disease and poverty trust thou in him, for as gold is tried in the fire, so are acceptable men in the furnace of humiliation." "What then," says someone, "use not the saints to be in sadness? Do you not hear Paul saying, 'I have great heaviness and continual sorrow in my heart'?" This indeed is the thing to wonder at, that sorrow brought a gain, and a pleasure that resulted from the gain, for as the scourge did not minister to them anguish, but gladness, so also again the sorrow ministered to them those great crowns. And this is the paradox, that not only the sadness of the world, but also its joy, contains extreme loss. But with regard to spiritual things, it is entirely the opposite, and not the joy only, but the sadness too contains a rich treasure of good things. If thou hast grieved on account of sin, thou hast blotted it out, and hast reaped the greatest pleasure. If thou hast grieved for thy brethren who have fallen, thou hast both encouraged and comforted thyself, and hast also restored them, and even if thou wert not to profit them, thou hast an abundant recompense. So that if any one entertains a godly sorrow, he will thence reap a great advantage. Since, therefore, those who are in tribulation among us are more blessed than those who are free from it, without, And those who are sad are more blessed than those in pleasure. What further source of tribulation shall we have? On this account we should call no man happy, save him only who lives according to God. These only the Scripture terms blessed, for blessed, it is said, is the man who hath not walked in the counsel of the ungodly. Blessed is he who thou hast chastised, and teachest him out of thy law. Blessed are the undefiled in the way. Blessed are all those who trust in him. Blessed is the people whose God is the Lord. Blessed is he whom his soul condemneth not. Blessed is the man that feareth the Lord. And again Christ speaks thus, Blessed are they that mourn. Blessed are the humble. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are they who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. Seest thou how the divine laws everywhere pronounce blessed none of the rich, or of that well-born, or of the possessors of glory, but those who have gotten hold of virtue? For what is required of us is, that in everything we do or suffer, the fear of God should be the foundation. And if you implant this as the root, not merely will ease and honor and glory and attention germinate fruits that shall be pleasurable to thee, but hostilities also, and calumnies, and contempt, and disgrace, and torments, and all things without exception. And just as the roots of trees are bitter, and yet they produce our sweetest fruits, so verily godly sorrow will bring us an abundant pleasure. They know, who have often prayed with anguish and shed tears, what gladness they have reaped, how they purged the conscience, how they rose up with favorable hopes. For it is not the nature of the things, but our disposition, which usually makes us sad or joyful. If then we can render the latter such as it ought to be, we shall have a pledge for all gladness. If then thou desirest joy, seek not after riches, nor bodily health, nor glory, nor power, nor luxury, nor sumptuous tables, nor vestures of silk, nor choice lands, nor houses splendid and conspicuous, nor any other thing of that sort, but pursue that wisdom which is according to God, and take hold of virtue. And then not all the things which are present, or which are expected, will be able to sadden thee. Verily the things that make others sad will prove to thee an occasion of pleasure.